Oh, yeah, we're talking about Game of Thrones here tonight, gentlemen.
Yes.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Hello, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
So we're just going to go ahead and dive right down in. With your permission, I'll begin.
Do it.
My little birdies tell me that there is a gathering of gentlemen, a gentleman nerd club in the Lobot Lounge. These gentlemen know all things esoteric and trivial. Their knowledge is ponderous. I, the spider weaving his web, am very interested in what these gentlemen have to say, as they are turning their attention to Westeros this evening. Let's meet the august members of this small council. Mark Finn.
Hodor!
Mickey Finn.
A man is no one.
And Aaron D'Arrive.
Boobies, death and boobies, and some dragons, but it's mainly about boobies.
I see what you did there.
Welcome, one and all, to the Gentlemen Nerds.
And we're talking about Game of Thrones, in case you haven't guessed.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Joseph Otinos, and we are once again here at the Lobot Lounge to talk about all things Westeros and Game of Thrones, the HBO series that has taken the world by storm. See what I did there, Storm? I know.
You are cleverer
than based on the George R.R. Martin series of books, A Song of Fire and Ice.
Ice and Fire.
Ice and Fire, pardon. Which basically is Dungeons and Dragons with boobies. No, there's a lot more to it than that. There are great things like dragons and monsters and the living dead and dire wolves and crazies. Giants. There's all kinds of crazy things going on. If you haven't seen the show, ladies and gentlemen, those of you listening, highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun. It is adult, so it's not for kids. It's definitely an adult program. But it is sort of like a fantasy program, Dungeons and Dragons style kind of, you know.
With less magic.
World. With less magic. Well, there is magic, though.
There is magic.
Yeah, but certainly it's low key.
There's nobody throwing fireballs around, you know.
No, they're just becoming shape-shifting cloud people to stab other people.
Yes.
What have you. I mean, there's we got a Frankenguard now walking around. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. So we're gonna kind of delve into it. We're gonna be spoiler heavy, folks. So if you have not seen the latest episode of Game of Thrones and you haven't caught up, we're in season 6, I believe, episode 2, season 6, and all the episodes before that. We advise you to turn off this podcast and join us after you've caught up with the rest of
Now, I think we're doing all this wrong. Because this is the second podcast we've said, we advise you to turn off this podcast. That's
well, we don't want to spoil it. We are gentlemen.
We do not want to spoil it. And by the way, speaking of this show's not appropriate for kids, a shout out to Maisie Williams, who the amazing Maisie Williams, who plays Arya on the show. She is the one actually who composed the Death and Boobies version of the intro song. Which
nice.
And also surprised some folks with the premiere for season 6.
Yes.
She was in California and sent out a tweet saying, hey, who's throwing a party? I'll send you some snacks. And then she showed up with some snacks.
That's awesome.
Did you see the bit where she was doing at a comic store where she was handing out Game of Thrones swag if people knew trivia and denying who she was? People were like, you're from that? She goes, no, I get that all the time. It's not me. A lot of fun.
Yeah, she's very cool. I feel like she's got a good head on her shoulders for.
Oh yeah,
because you know
she does, and you know what? She knows exactly. She is doing it perfectly. She knows exactly how to use social media. She is charming and funny and smart. You know, she's in 5-10 years. I think she's gonna be a huge star.
Yeah, down. What I refer to is down and dirty ladylike. Meaning she's got the charisma, she's got the class, but she gets her hands dirty. She gets in there with the fans.
Yeah. No, she's wonderful. Yeah. She's wonderful. She's one of us, and I think that always makes a big difference for a celebrity when they seem like this is somebody you could sit down and just have a meal with and chat and you'd both laugh and you'd both crack each other up. And so, yeah, I'm a huge fan of
and as a geek, the fact that the character, which is one of my favorite character from the books, got cast so perfectly. And then that actress grew up to be so awesome in real life is just kind of like, woo.
Yeah.
Right. And watching her grow up too. I mean, we actually got to see her grow up, which is always kind of fun. It's a dodgy thing too. So sometimes they don't work. Todd Bridge as being a good example of that. But no, I think she's great, and we won't have that happen with her. So Game of Thrones, here we go. Let's do some speculation. I mean, we are now past the point, I think, of the books, or at least in the linear timeline of the books. They can go back and show us things they haven't shown us yet that have been covered in the books but not shown on screen.
Yes.
They could, if they wanted, I suppose, show us the entire Bronn walking around with Hodor bit, and because we, my God, he got like 3 times bigger all of a sudden.
Yes.
We saw him last night. We're like, whoa, Bronn!
Yeah, unless we didn't recognize him at first. I thought it was another guy in there with him, and then I went, oh, wait, that's him.
Actually, before we do this, I want to find out from the assembled here, how many of you have read the books and what book are you on? Just around the table. I've read up. I got to Dances with Dragons and got about halfway through it and gave up. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Is anybody else?
What's the one?
I'm actually in the same place because I was Dance with Dragons, the third one or fourth one?
That's the fifth one.
Fifth one. Okay. I got partway along, and then I've been listening to it on audiobooks, and
okay.
It changed readers. And the new reader was completely and totally what? He turned Dany into a Valley girl, and Tyrion became a leprechaun. It was painful to listen to, and I just couldn't listen to it anymore. So.
Oh, did he do Tyrion like the Lucky the Leprechaun from the serial?
Kind of, yes.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was after the golden coins.
And I just found out today.
Which one's the book that
there's
split
two different
the two
readers, and so you can actually get the original guy that everybody loved
oh,
doing
good.
The same books. I have to track those down because I'm not sure
if
there's a region problem. You know, you have to order them from Amazon UK. Maybe I don't know.
Which one is the book that split the stories into two, where one half was Brienne and all her adventures, and the second half was Cersei and all, because that's the last one I remember trying to get through.
I think that's the fourth one.
Okay,
yeah.
So yeah, that's
where Dance with Dragons would be the other half of that of that timeline.
Yeah,
that's where I gave up. I gave up on the fourth.
I have read the first book.
Oh wow!
Period.
Oh,
and
you're in a good place.
I made a choice. Said I could continue this, or I could just watch the TV show and enjoy that. And that's what I decided to do. And I know, I think I will come around eventually and read them, but I'm going to hold off. I'm going to watch the TV show and be surprised and enjoy. Like, I personally didn't see the Red Wedding coming, so it was a huge shock to me.
Right.
The Red Wedding, of course, being the big slaughter, death wedding that happened.
And the really weird thing is, everybody always says it's better in the books. It was much grander in the books. It was much more horrific.
And there is something there's a coda to that. The tale that ends the Red Wedding is that Lady Stark is alive as a revenant.
Yes,
right. Yeah. She comes back as the Night Queen or something.
Lady Stoneheart.
Stoneheart.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
she's freaking scary.
Yeah, right. I don't. From what I gather, I don't think they're going to do Lady Stoneheart in the series.
They might do it with Jon.
Well, they're going to do something with John. But you know, here's the thing. You know, here's what I think is the smart thing to do, and they're doing it. When they knew, and of course, you know, they've known this months and months in advance. This is not a big secret or something that snuck up on them. When they knew that the TV show would catch up and surpass the novels, they probably made a choice. And that choice was, you know what? What happens in the TV show is going to be different.
There's
than
no
what
probably.
Happens,
they've actually said yes.
Right. Then what happens in the novel?
Yeah.
Because that gives the readers a reason to still buy the novels.
Right.
Yeah.
You can enjoy both at that point. They almost become two separate stories that are inspired by the show is inspired by the novels, but it is not the novels translated into.
Yeah. And we probably, it should go without saying, but apparently some people out there think this is actually a historical account or like actual mythos.
Right. Well, but, you know, that's a testament to George's ability and talent. I mean, you know, if I didn't know better, I would have thought, oh, he took this from some, and he has stated already that the War of the Roses was a big inspiration and a bunch of other historical events were an inspiration. But, he has created a world that is absolutely believable. And so, yeah, you know, I don't blame younger readers for going, wow, did this happen? You know, kind of thing.
As far as readers go, I understand there's a tad bit of frustration on the part of George R.R. Martin, at least directed toward him, some of my friends who read the books, who've read the books and are just patiently waiting for him to get off his ass and do the rest of them, that he is maybe sitting a bit on his laurels, if, as it were, and not working on his...
Oh, he's not sitting on his laurels. He's got 20 projects in the fire.
I think that's my understanding.
The 20 projects he's got, that's not Game of Thrones. It's other things, right?
Yes. But you know, the thing is that he... Right now, his cachet in Hollywood is so strong, he can't wait. You know, he can't hope that that's going to be the case 2-3 years down the road. I'd be doing the same thing. Jump on every possible imaginable project that you can get set up. And, of course, George comes from the world of TV. Yeah. He's had lots of experience. Right. He used to write. He was the main writer for Beauty and the Beast, the Ron Perlman Beauty and the Beast. And so he knows. He knows what's what. So, hell yeah, jump on that and go, you want a TV show from me? Original? Done. What is that, Netflix? You'd like a show? Done. You
know, what else is he doing?
All kinds of projects, as far as I can tell. He's doing, there's some sort of prequel for Game of Thrones in the works.
Would you say that would really make people angry who are just waiting for the story to finish for him to go back?
No, I mean.
You've never read Lois from Master Bajold, have you?
No.
I think that the HBO series is doing a decent job of scratching that itch for people. And now that they're off in the weeds, we have the additional advantage of it's scratching an itch with these characters that we like and that we want to see, you know, succeed and thrive, and we want to see plans come to pass. But Aaron pointed out it's not going to take anything away from when the books hit later. So he's kind of built a little cushion, and he also,
unless he dies. Well, he's old and he's incredibly overweight. He takes poor care of himself. He may just drop over dead.
But no, listen.
I'm serious.
I know. But I agree with Neil Gaiman. I mean, George R. R. Martin is not your bitch, and so he can do whatever he wants to do. You know.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a certain responsibility. I do believe that. That he has to fans who have been very loyal and have bought all his books and have supported that entire endeavor all this time. However, because he is older and perhaps may not be in the best of health, but the thing is, when it, again, another reason for jump on these projects right now, create these projects right now, because his health may not allow him to do that. 2-3-5 years from
that's,
now.
You know what? That's what it is. I honestly, I hate to say it because I don't want to wish anyone ill, but I do think that someone else will finish the Game of Thrones series. I don't think he's going to do it. I think he's going to die before he
Brandon
finishes
Sanderson.
It.
No, wait.
Well, and you know, and that's fine. I honestly, at this point, I stopped reading the books anyway. So I definitely want to see how the story concludes, but it would not destroy me if I knew that other writers were coming in and finishing.
Right.
I do have a request for future writers finishing the series. Those whole long sequences where he says who knighted who and who gifted who land, just cut those, especially in the audiobook.
But again, isn't that exactly what the fans love about the books?
Let me say this because in kind of going off of Gaiman's, he's not your personal writer. This is the story that he wants to tell, and it's the way he wants to tell it. And
I'm not saying he shouldn't. I'm just saying any future writers can skip that, make it a lot easier. So.
I think you can split the world into, basically two camps. And I know where me and Aaron fall on, which side of the camp in terms of, we like plot, we like action, we like movement. And yeah. Martin is specifically doing this, with intention, and he is in some ways working out a kind of a, I don't want to call it an alternate history. I guess we could call it quasi-history. It's very similar to
Tolkien,
what Tolkien did with Lord of the Rings. And so, there's and I say this as someone who does not like this particular style of storytelling, but I think when he realized that this was not going to be a trilogy, when he realized that he wanted to go deep, I think it's okay that he doesn't make a promise, because as soon as you say it's going to be five books, and then you go, well, no, it's going to be six, people will go, you said five. If he says seven books and then wraps it up in six, people are going to go, you said seven. So, right. You know, fans are very, you know, you can't really win with them. And so
I think the
thing he's got to be true to is he's got to be true to the story he's created. And unfortunately, it's a monster. It's a Dr. Seuss machine to rival Sylvester McMonkey McBean's Star Sneech Maker. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of things to keep track of, and he's got a cadre of people who, you know, help him with the lineage and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm gonna respect that process. Step back and let him finish.
Which is why, by the way, I'm glad that the show and the novels are two separate entities,
yeah,
because the itch that Mark described is scratched beautifully by the TV show. Beautifully. I am satisfied.
And it's also going to be an itch that Martin may not scratch when he gets around to it.
Right.
Let's be honest.
What I mean is that, you know, Jon Snow may not come back to life in the books.
Right.
That may not
Does
be
he
a
die
thing.
In the books?
They don't say he's dead, Jim, but we'd certainly see him stabbed multiple times lying there in a pool of blood.
Yeah, that For the Watch scene is from the books.
But I think George also said something, I don't know if this was a slip or whatever, but he, you know, tongue-in-cheek said, you think he's dead, do you? I mean, something like that, which he may have been intimating from the TV show.
Right.
But I'm wondering if there was a Bible, and if there was, that George sat down with the producers and said, here's how it ends.
He did.
And then so we know, well, obviously, I'm sure he did. But so obviously we're going to have an endpoint, at least in the TV show. We know how it's going to end. He knows how it's going to end. And now comes the – and this is the part that I hate, folks, because I get really cynical and really pessimistic because Lost burned the hell out of me. And I said to myself, God damn it, these guys don't know what they're doing, do they? They really don't. They had an endpoint, but they said, let's pull that stool underneath this and just keep milking this. Let's just keep going. Because they said, oh, it's Limbo. We figured it out. No, it's not. It's not Limbo. It's not. Guess what? It was Limbo.
Yeah.
They actually did.
Yeah. J.J. Abrams set it up for them and handed the show over to them, and they went, this is cool. Sandbox. What's an arc?
Yeah. Well, that's not a bad thing in this case. We're at a point now, which we've spoken of many times on this podcast in the past. We're in a very fortunate time for pop culture, for fantasy, science fiction, and things, because there was a time in all of our lives when we can remember there weren't a lot of fantasy, science fiction, and horror movies being made. And then when they did make one that was based on a book and it deviated from the book, you were so mad. You were so angry because how could you do that to The Shining? It's one of King's best books. What were you thinking, Stanley Kubrick? And of course, you know, there's the, you know, for, and that's what the adage of, you know, well, the book's better. The book's always better.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
no,
it's not. And that's the other thing too, though. Sorry to interrupt, Mark, but I mean, go back, fans of Lord of the Rings, especially the movies. My God, sit down and read the books, and you will quickly understand. Thank you for making the decisions that you did in the movies. I've drawn a blank on the director's name.
Peter Jackson.
Thank you, Peter Jackson, because there are moments in the book if he had shot him like that, would be terrible. I've talked about the fight at the gates to Khazad of Doom, where the thing comes out of the water and it grabs Frodo. All of the men, and it reads just like this, all of the men scream and run into the Mines of Moria, and Sam alone goes out with his sword, hacking at the tentacled beast so it lets go of his master.
Right.
And you know how badly that scene would have sucked if Viggo Mortensen and Sean Bean had all gone, hugged each other and run into the mines?
Yeah, that would have
been hilarious.
Oh, my God. There are so many moments like that.
One does not simply scream like a girl and run into the mines of Moria.
Yes, I mean, Legolas, cool Legolas, you know, I'm the prettiest Legolas, sees the Balrog and starts shrieking like Fay Wray.
Yeah.
I not want to see him do a Daffy Duck.
That would not have played on screen.
I think this sea change is largely a result of the younger generation of fans. I won't say that this is all the fan fiction people that have kind of advocated for some of this, but I think there's a realization now that when we're dealing with different mediums, we're dealing with different mediums. I think that's more of an understood now than it ever has been.
Thank God.
You can't expect that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you can't expect the novel to be translated word for word, shot for shot. It just won't work.
Right.
It just won't work. I know that one of the famous unfilmable novels of the past,
yeah,
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, they said it was unfilmable. You cannot film Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Well, they filmed
right.
it. And it wasn't like the book at all. I mean, it was, but it wasn't. They took a lot out. They moved things around. And they did that correctly. They needed to do it the way they did.
You know, right now we have several things going that are bolstering this idea that they're doing with Game of Thrones. So it's nothing new. We have the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which has made it clear that we're using the comics as touchstone material, but we're going to do our own story in a way that's going to still be true to the characters. And I think they figured that out as well. You've got to keep these characters intact because the characters are what people really invest in. When True Blood came out, they started out with the first book from Charlene Harris, and they quickly went into the weeds and did their own thing. The Walking Dead is another wonderful example of how I have this TV show that's got these characters in it, and then there's a comic book series that's using the same characters in different ways, and the outcome's not always the same, and the fans have embraced that because it's twice the fun. So this is nothing new, and I think this is going to be the thing that makes Game of Thrones the power player for the next couple of years. One thing that, and I think it's a valid criticism, the books are downers. And the books do. One of the reasons why I stopped reading 5 is I had lost the narrative thread of most of the characters that I didn't care about, and there wasn't enough left for the characters that I did care about. And there were periods in the 4th book where, I mean, I gritted my teeth through the Tyrion Lannister stuff, where he was made to be a performing freak in a circus. And let me tell you something.
And by the way, that Mark is that's a beautiful example.
Yeah.
Martin had to write what is happening to Tyrion while he is traveling through the lands he's traveling. What is going on with him? What is he doing? What sorts of things is he encountering? So he has to write that kind of stuff.
Right.
On a TV show, we show a pan of this land, and then we're with Tyrion, and he's talking to the spider. And that's it. That's all we ever need to know. Who cares what he was doing
on the
journey?
He steps off the boat.
And his dignity remains intact.
Yes.
He's still cool Tyrion Lannister, not a guy that had to masquerade as a dancing clown.
But it was a different Tyrion. I mean, he in the book, if I'm not mistaken, he's missing his nose.
He's a grotesque.
He's a freak.
Yes, he's a monster.
He's also a gymnast. So
he's very much like a hop toad or hop frog from the Poe story.
Absolutely.
He sounds like he's nimble. He moves about it. He's very smart.
But that's what we're talking about. Peter Dinklage said, "You're not going to chop my nose off," and they knew, no, we're not going to chop his nose off. You know, we're not going to be doing a prosthetic for the entire second half of the series. So they chose not. They made different choices. Mm-hmm. The other thing
doesn't make it worse. Doesn't make it
better. No.
Well,
I think it's more suited to a cinematic. When you're reading something,
right,
you're not constantly looking at Tyrion or have him constantly in your mind.
Right.
You know it's Tyrion. You have a general idea of him, and then you're reading what he's saying. In a movie, my eyes are constantly glued on Peter Dinklage.
Yeah,
what is his face doing while he's delivering this line?
Yeah,
but
a prime example of that is Jim Butcher's Harry Dresden fitting into a Volkswagen Bug. In the book, he can make it dramatic or funny. On film, it's always going to be funny because the guy's too big for the car.
Right.
Exactly. But another example from Game of Thrones is the decision to make it Stark who marries Ramsay as opposed to Jane Poole, who I could give a shit about.
Yes.
You know, make it the characters that we already know, we're invested. I want to know what happens to this character. I care about what happens to this character. So the showrunner's decision to make it, you know what, it should be Sansa.
Yeah.
Now suddenly I really am invested in that
story. And that brings up something else about the show. The show has made me actually care about characters that you want to strangle in the books.
Yeah, yeah.
Cersei actually doesn't come across as a complete raving loon. She's a broken person, but she's not a complete raving.
She's played beautifully. She's played beautifully on the show.
Yes, Lena Headley is.
God, Theon, Reek. I hated Reek in the books.
Yeah.
Couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
And this last episode with Theon saying goodbye to Sansa, and oh my lord, I'm like, no, Theon, I forgive you. I forgive you.
And
come
Sansa,
back to the family.
Sansa was a whiny brat in the books.
Yeah.
And she's.
But she was also in the TV show,
yeah,
too, but she evolved.
Yeah, but she quickly grew out of that, just like.
I wouldn't say quickly. She was a whiny brat for a while.
Yeah,
she was living with Joffrey and thinking
nothing
she
like
is,
the books.
Yeah,
you know.
she's
no, but
very different.
Because we talked about that, they had to condense it. They had to move things along. We don't care so much, especially when we have to like them eventually.
And Joseph, you've at least read the first book, so this is only applicable in the first book. Dany is a victim through so much of the first book.
Oh, yeah.
And
her brother, Rachel,
they toned that down considerably, and I was so thankful for that. You know, by the second episode, she's kind of breaking out of that some.
I still felt like I got it.
Yes.
You know, I
you
still
got
felt
point.
Like I got the point without having it pounded into me over and over and over and over again, like beating over the head with a dead rabbit or a dead dragon, as the case may be.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the TV show in its current state.
Man.
For those of you who have, I know. For those of you who have been watching Game of Thrones, and are completely caught up, it's anyone's ball game at this point. So we all have theories. I think we should talk about what we think is going to happen. Who would you like to see sit on the Iron Throne of Westeros, and why? Why do you think that person would be the best ruler? Now, obviously, there's an end point, remember, but we don't know what that is. We could speculate all day long. Is it Daenerys Targaryen? Is it going to be a Lannister who's going to be sitting up there? I think Tommen is a fine king. I don't think he's going to last, bless his heart.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he's a fine king.
He's a better character than he was in the books, too.
Yeah.
He's a good person. You know, he's a good, kind person. And that's something that's rare. And good, kind people don't last too long in this
world. No, they've got a clock on.
That's the problem.
Yep.
You know, you have to play the game, if you will. So just going around the table with a second round of drinks, let's talk about who will end up on the Iron Throne. Aaron, you want to start?
Oh, gosh.
Aaron doesn't have any theories.
Getting it right out there, yes, the three-headed my guess for the three-headed dragon, without
explain,
a doubt,
explain the three-headed dragon briefly.
It is a vision that Daenerys had at some point, showing her that there would be this three-headed dragon that would basically, you know, come back to Westeros and either conquer things or set things right or destroy the current rulers that were there.
And this is from the books, because they hadn't done that.
Yes,
in the TV show.
I believe this is in the books.
Okay.
I don't remember which book she had that vision, or maybe it was in the Houses of the Dead that she had that vision. Anyway, at some point
in the TV show, there's no three-headed dragon. We haven't seen that
except
point,
on her
back. Right. There is a prophecy of a three-headed dragon.
Okay.
And if you go and read in the books, the colors associated with the dragon are in fact the colors of House Targaryen, House Lannister, and House Stark. So it's pretty clear to me, I don't know that's how they're going to go in the TV show, but it's pretty clear to me that one of them is Daenerys. She's already a dragon rider and mistress of dragons. The second one will be Jon Snow, who we will find out is the actual son, and not even the bastard son, but is the legitimate son of Ned Stark's sister, Lyanna, and Rhaegar, who married her secretly. Off camera, stole her away, supposedly.
The Mad King.
No. Rhaegar, the son of the Mad King.
Oh,
Aerys.
Pardon.
He was the heir.
Was Rhaegar not Daenerys' brother?
Yes.
The one who got the gold on his head?
No. That's there were three children. Rhaegar was the oldest.
Okay.
Then there was Viserys, who ended up getting killed.
Okay.
And then Daenerys.
What happened to Rhaegar? Do we know?
Rhaegar was killed by the king, Baratheon.
Robert.
Oh, during the invasion
during the
of
battle
King's
of the
Trident.
Yeah, the Trident. Okay. Yeah, he was basically had
because
his,
as the story goes, he kidnapped and raped Robert.
Yeah. That was the story. That he kidnapped and raped the sister of Ned Stark, who Robert Baratheon was in love with.
The theory is that that was a cover story and it was actually a secret wedding.
Correct. He whisked her off. They were secretly married. She is a legitimate wife of Rhaegar, and Jon Snow is their child. You know, when Ned found her, and I think she died in childbirth because Targaryen births tend to do that. Sometimes they kill the mother, which is why I'll get to Tyrion in a minute. He found her. She was dying, had just given birth. She handed the baby to him, swore him to secrecy and to protect the child. And Ned said yes, and took the baby off and claimed it was his bastard from somebody else.
Which is greatly out of character for him.
Right.
Not the swearing, but actually having a bastard son to come back.
Right.
That's out of character for him.
And brought him back to Winterfell, which is why, you know, Lady Stark was so resentful to Jon the whole time, because that just, her husband didn't do stuff like that. So anyway, so that's the second dragon, Jon Snow, Jon/Targaryen. And the third dragon, in my opinion, is Tyrion. I think Tyrion is not the actual blood son of Tywin. And I think when Tywin said, "You are no son of mine," he wasn't being figurative. He wasn't, you know, disowning him because of he had just shot him with some crossbow bolts. He literally meant, "You are no son of mine." And there's moments in the show where he says, "I can't prove that you're not my son, so I raised you," kind of thing. And his mother was killed in childbirth, died in childbirth. Again, giving birth to a deformity. A lot of Targaryen children are born deformed. Some had like scaled tails and claws and things like that. So
you think the father was Rhaegar again?
No, that was Aerys, the Mad King.
That was the Mad King.
Yes, she came to court on some occasion, I think, to present her new children, them being Cersei and Jaime. And Aerys had his way with her. And we know that Aerys did something to insult Tywin because Tywin resigned his hand and left.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks, both in the novel and in the TV show, of the various grave insults that Tywin faced at the hands of Aerys the Mad King. So I think Aerys is the father of Tyrion, who is also, in turn, a Targaryen.
That does explain that scene.
Oh, tell me about it.
Where he's talking to the dragons, and the dragons seem to understand him.
Good Lord, yes. What other character? Okay. Name me in the novels or the show another non-Targaryen who's ever walked up to a dragon and petted them and not been devoured or completely scorched.
And on top of that, the fact that he would even think that of the dragons in the first place.
Right.
Because he is a master of trying to stay out of harm's way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was his idea to go do it.
He's felt a pull towards these dragons since they first introduced him. There's that scene, that long scene where he's looking up in the sky, watching the dragon fly overhead, and the look on Dinklage's face is just amazing.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
He's dreamed about these things.
That's
my guess, is those three, that's the three heads of the dragon. Who will actually sit on the Iron Throne? That is a damn good question. It's not going to be Tyrion. It's not going to be Tyrion. And for some reason, I suspect Dany is doomed. I don't know why I suspect that, but I suspect Dany is doomed. Which probably leaves Jon as Jon, the actual heir of Rhaegar Targaryen and his legitimate wife, Lyanna. I think it's going to be Jon Snow. Jon Targaryen.
I think maybe Jon can sit on the throne and Daenerys can sit on his lap and then Tyrion can sit on her lap and they can all share the throne.
Now it's definitely the HBO.
There we go.
Series.
There we go.
So that is my theories and that is my guess that the person who will end up ruling over Westeros is Jon Targaryen.
So many spiders spinning their webs. All right. That's interesting. Okay. Well, there you go. You've heard it here, folks. We have the three-headed dragon that was in the books that was mentioned. And that's the prophecy, if you will, possibly a conclusion of what's going to happen. Mark, what theories do you have as far as who's going to end up on the Iron Throne?
Purely from a gut check point of view and based on my sense of how story arcs go. You know, I watch it as a fan and then I go back and watch it again, you know, with my writer eyes and try to, like, see what they did, you know? And so I think that Daenerys is going to have to end up on the throne. But I think she'll do it by uniting the different houses. And because, you know, we've got three arcs that are kind of playing out here, you know? We have Tyrion, who's trying to sort of prove his worth to all of Westeros, basically. And so as a POV character, we are sympathetic to him because of his, you know, he never got the affection from his family, save Jaime, that he felt he was owed, that any child is owed, frankly. Arya Stark will avenge all of the deaths, that have been incurred.
She better hurry, though. Her list is getting smaller.
The list is getting smaller, I know. And I think that – I don't think she will be in any place to rule. I think that Jon Snow coming back to life really puts a wrinkle in things, because I just assumed that this was another character scrubbed, you know. And so in the TV series, we may have a very different trajectory. But I think he'll be the one – because we've already seen he's got loyalty in the Night's Watch, and he's got loyalty to the Wildlings. And if you add the Wildlings' loyalty to Jon Snow and the Dothraki's loyalty to Daenerys Targaryen, you now have two barbarian hordes ready to overthrow the decadent, entrenched, weak, and feeble civilization. And this, we now get into the Robert E. Howard territory, which is there's a real Robert E. Howard vibe in this stuff. George is a fan, and so I think there's some of this is very intentional, and I think that's why the sword and sorcery aspect of the show is so low tech as it is. You know, in a world where dragons are almost myths, dire worlds become amazing things. And so, so I think that Daenerys is going to unite all of the downtrodden peoples, and they're going to basically claim the new kingdom for themselves. That's my theory.
And don't forget that ties in with that theory. Don't forget her vision of the throne room completely in ashes.
Scorched.
And so, you know, whether or not that's an end game or maybe a plot point that takes us to Aaron's end game, I'm not really sure. I got to be honest. About halfway through the last season, I kind of turned off the writer brain and just started watching it, you know, mm-hmm. and letting it kind of wash over me. And that's, of course, been very satisfying, especially since Arya's finally getting her assassin training, which is all I've ever wanted. Right?
Yes.
I just want her to go and just keep killing everyone. That's my that's my hope for her, is that she'll become, you know, I would love to see her as the Hand of the King, you know, at some point, or the Hand of the Queen, rather, you know, where she's sort of like the enforcer. For the new regime, but I just don't think that's her style. It never was. She's born to battle. Anyways.
Okay. So as long as we're talking about what we really want, I want a lot more Gwendolyn Christie on screen. Gwendolyn Christie.
Also, one of my favorite characters from the books.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
She's wonderful. And
Gwendolyn, if for whatever reason you are listening to this podcast, know that you have four very dedicated and adoring fans.
But I'm the biggest, and so you should. This is Joseph.
Yes.
Joseph Otinos is my name. It's F as in Frank, Otinos. I live in Austin, Texas, Gwendolyn, and I love you.
Yes, we all love you. We think you're awesome. You can't be in enough stuff.
Okay.
I don't know about the rest of you, but I cheered. When she came riding around the corner.
Oh Jesus.
Was that not the
brilliant.
Best thing ever?
And let's hear it for Podrick, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Podrick, shut up.
And she seems to have these moments in the second episode, because the second episode of the previous season was when her Valyrian steel sword broke the other horse rider's sword.
Just
smashed straight through it.
I really think this is something in the TV show that they've done a really good job with, because in the novel, she's a tragic character because she fails in her duty, you know, and can't seem to get it back. And I feel like just these last two episodes of season six have been so nice, because at least for now, she's been made whole again, you know.
By the way, that just reminded me why I stopped reading the books. I stopped reading the books when they hung her character.
Mm.
When they were up in some north castle, whatever, and That's it. That's when I said, I'm done. Now you're just killing to kill, and I love some of these characters, and I have no interest in continuing to read.
Did you stop
so I am
then?
Very glad.
Did you stop just then?
Yeah, I mean, I got...
Doesn't she survive that and then kill... Or is this a different chapter?
Oh, no. I think the chapter ends that way. I think they pull her up, and she's gasping and struggling, and the chapter ends, and then it jumps to other characters. And I just close the book.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody who's read the...
I can't say. Okay. I don't know.
This is the abandoned fortress, right?
Yes.
Okay,
so she doesn't die? No. Like, when we come back to her later?
Of course, if I'm wrong, somebody correct me in the comments.
Okay, well, yeah, I don't remember, but that's where I stopped reading.
I like so many elements of the TV show. Again, I'm speaking about the TV show because I've only read the first book. I like the fact that the mountain is now my Franken knight.
Yes.
Every time I see him, I go, he's walking dead. And now let's talk about The Walking Dead, because that's really kind of where I'm going to lead with this one. I think... And this is just my crazy Joseph theory.
Come on.
I do think that the Night King is going to end up on that throne. That's what I think.
Oh, wow.
I think
the other? The
Night King.
No way.
Yes.
The guy that runs the other, the ruler of the other?
I think what happened is no one's taken this seriously. No one's considering it. No one's thinking about the idea that when the dead walk, senores, we must stop the killing or we'll lose the war. Because every time somebody dies, that son of a bitch can raise him. And we're talking about armies, just vast armies, and they're moving. Remember, they kept saying, winter is coming, winter is coming, winter is coming.
Yeah.
Guess what? That's winter, and it's coming. And everyone's like, oh, no, whatever, the dead's not, you know, whatever. You get some dragon, what's that, dragon glass?
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of that around.
Yeah, but we got three dragons and lots of sand.
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually predict that Jon Targaryen is going to kill the that guy.
Actually,
see, I think
here
it's
going
to get worse.
Dorne
before it
winds up
better.
Being the final stronghold because they have all that sand. The dragons go over there. They start making dragon sand.
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think that.
So
how
will the Night King sit on the Iron
Throne? I think it's going to move down. I think winter is coming. I think the dead, the army of the dead, and the ice and snow that are accompanied are just going to move through. I just think it's going to be this.
Season 7 is going to end that way.
And what's going to happen to all the humans? Like, they just
And here's your three-headed dragon theory.
Okay.
I think they're going to have to band together to fight against this because
I agree.
Humans are fighting humans, and humans are fighting humans. There's something so much worse out there, and they don't even know about that yet.
I agree with that.
And
the
I think
fact that they're going to fight him.
I think Ramsay Bolton is going to play a big part in that. I think he's going to do something, say something, open a gate, let something in. He's that kind of psychopath. A lot of people kill people in this TV show, folks. A lot of people kill people. Ramsay Bolton kills people because he has to and because he likes to. He really likes to kill people.
I'm honestly surprised they didn't show the baby getting eaten, honestly.
No,
the look on his face was enough.
That was rough.
I think that they have listened to some of the criticism about the show. I don't feel that they have softened the telling of the tale at all. Because clearly... the visuals. We don't need to see the visuals to know exactly what happens.
Yeah.
And there's
we understand what's going to happen. Okay, so okay.
Back to my theory.
Yeah, to clarify,
I'm going
to
clarify.
He's not going to end up being...
No, but he's
going to
get down there.
Gotcha,
he's going to cause...
Gotcha.
But what's his end game? What is what's the story behind the Walking Dead, the White Walkers? What's going on with that? What do they want?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. What do they want? Well, they want to take over. They want to rule.
They want a vacation in the Summer Isles.
They do. They want to know what it's like in the sun, just like Olaf.
No.
They want
to... I think that the winter is coming. I think the walkers are a supernatural manifestation of that the cleansing fire, that the cataclysm that wipes out civilizations and allows cultures to start over or rebuild or strengthen. And I think that's what the White Walkers are in this particular instance.
Song of Ice and Fire.
But in order for it to have an effect, they've got to keep coming down.
Yeah.
They got to move past
the
wall
and start moving through. It's cyclical. But to your point, who do you think will sit on the Iron Throne? Once he's defeated, once the Night King is defeated, who do you think is going to rule?
Jon Snow.
Okay.
I think it's Jon Snow.
Okay.
But I think the Night King's going to cause a lot of problems. He's going to. I mean, I want to see King's Landing overrun with White Walkers.
It probably will.
That's what I want to see. And I want to see the only way they're going to beat that, like you say, dragon glass, sand, bring those dragons out, and we're going to have the Warg, who can control the dragons, no doubt. He's going to actually take over some dragons, and he's going to, yeah, Bronn will be controlling dragons, Tyrion will be riding dragons, Daenerys will be on one, Jon Snow will be on one. It'll be a beautiful scene. They'll come flying into King's Landing, the three-headed dragons flying on dragons to defeat the Night King and the Living Dead, which is the real threat here, folks, because that's some pretty serious stuff.
I think that one of the things that's interesting, I think that the TV show sort of keeping the dragons alive, I feel like, and I haven't spoken to George about this, so I don't know, but you know, at the beginning of the book in the series, they said that the dragons are dead. There are no more dragons. The Starks all get dire wolves, which is sort of their family's totem animal. Mm-hmm. And then we see one by one those dire wolves taken out. Yep. And so there's a sense of,
except for Ghost.
Well, Ghost sticks around, and
Ghost sticks around and happens to belong to the guy who dies and comes back from the dead.
And there's another dire wolf out there that belongs to Lady. Belongs to Sansa, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Sent her away.
Yeah.
Naughty, naughty, naughty.
A note from the editing bay. We were wrong about that. It is Arya's Nymeira.
So what I find interesting about all this is that it seems that initially we're subverting some of these sort of fantasy tropes. I mean, it's very commonplace to have stories about dragons and my wolf is my, you know, he's more than my companion. He's not quite my familiar, but we share a mental connection. You know, I mean, that's Coscarelli's Beastmaster. That's all this other stuff.
Yeah. it's very Andre Norton.
Yeah, yeah, and we're getting, but then he does introduce, you know, the skinwalking idea for Bran as the seer of sights, you know, and so I think that all of these things are kind of in the coming to the fore. The White Walkers are coming. The dragons have returned. At least two of the wolves are still alive, and one of them is unaccounted for. You know, there may come a day when Sansa is reunited with her wolf, and so I wonder if this is not signaling the return of magic. You know,
Right.
Yeah, because everything's coming back.
Well, the Lord of Light's going to control us all. We know that. It's the only god that matters.
It's true, he is a just and fair god, provided that
The old gods and the new are going to bow before the Lord of Light. Right. It's just going to be the way it's going to happen.
That's right. The one in seven will become the seven in one.
it's getting kind of hot in here, folks.
Yeah, going to a 7-Eleven.
I love that that Ghost is still around, and that probably that's just because I'm a dog lover, but but Ghost is very cool, you know, and I have to, as much of a trope, almost a cliche as it is, I like the idea that Jon Snow is he's sort of got all these elements in place, and he's got some things that Rob never had.
Oh, wow,
in terms of like this sort of kingship, you know. I mean, John had to win every one of his converts over, whereas Rob's people came to him by virtue of the fact that he just was a Stark.
Yes.
And, mm-hmm. So there's some sweat equity put in, right?
Yeah.
And so all of that stuff is fascinating, and I feel like the HBO series is going to be a more satisfying payoff, at least in that respect. Because they spent a lot of money on dragons, they've spent a lot of money on the direwolf, and they've made a point of including Ghost in some scenes where he's not in the book. So I think there's some
interesting... Well, they've even talked about that the budget for what they want, for what they have in mind for the actual finale, the big blowout battle, might be reserved for a movie because they actually don't have enough money to do the last battle with the Lord of the White Walkers and the dragons and everything else that comes into play, that they would do it a disservice by just making it a long episode of HBO.
Then call him the Night King.
So I've actually read that they're thinking maybe we should make it a movie. I mean, think about it. It'd be brilliant marketing. Everyone would go see that movie.
And also
everyone
the last,
would go see that movie.
The next two seasons are supposed to theoretically be the last. They haven't decided on that, but they're seriously considering it. And they'll only be 8 episodes each. So,
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they reserve the absolute end for a film. Yeah. For a movie. Yeah. 2-hour movie, spend $175, $200 million on it, and make everybody just sit there with their jaws in their lap.
Is there a precedent for that? Have they ever done that? Have they ever had a TV show that has gone multiple seasons where and then they finale it with a movie that they're taking for granted that anyone who's going to come see this movie has knowledge that's going to be paid off in this big
thing? Right. It happens in Japan all the time, but in Hollywood...
Right.
It seems a little bit of a stretch because that's a risk. You say everyone in the world would see the movie.
Now, on the flip side,
would have to explain everything.
They already tried to do this with The Dark Tower when Ron Howard had it.
I think that it wouldn't.
And they kind of did it with X-Files, kind of.
Yeah, X-Files kind of, but it failed. They didn't have a strong narrative thread going in, and they weren't building up to something. This is a build up to something, and honestly, Aaron, as much as I love that idea, I'd almost rather it be 3 movies. I mean, because the thing about that is the,
somebody call Peter Jackson, hurry.
Those three movies could, you know, the beginning of each movie could have a little prologue that's just enough, barely enough,
30 minutes get those, of Daenerys packing.
To get those people who, for some weird ass reason, and they're out there, by the way, okay? Because they've come to 2 Avengers movies at my theater, who for some strange reason haven't seen any of the other shit, but then show up for the Avengers movie and go, well, I've heard this is going to be good. I wonder what it's about, and I just have to go, where do you live? What moon of Saturn are you from? So,
even the Avengers though with your character. I mean, let's take that example. Say I've never seen any of the individual standalone Marvel films that come to the Avengers. I think I could follow. I know who Captain America is. I've heard of him. There's Iron Man. I know that dude. Oh, the Hulk. He's going to turn into the Hulk. I used to watch that TV show in the 70s. Yeah, I know that guy.
Granted,
I mean, it's a little bit more accessible than who's the white chick riding the dragon and the little guy and what the heck's going on?
Well, the movie wouldn't introduce them. I mean, the movie wouldn't.
They would have to do a really good job, better than Dune, in introducing these characters.
We would need a lot of context, but I think it could work. But regardless, Mickey, we never heard. What's your theory?
Yes,
Donald Trump.
Oh, God.
I am going to build such a wall, such an ice wall. It's going to be the best wall. And the White Walkers are going to pay for it.
Exactly.
That's good.
Oh, no, actually, pretty much everybody covered everything because I think there are elements of all three of what you guys are talking about that tie in with this. And I haven't been able to turn my writer's brain off. Simply because when they do a payoff of building something up or they reference something that they cut from the books, my writer's brain goes, ooh, and starts celebrating. So
who do you think is going to sit on the throne?
I'm sorry?
Who do you think will sit on the Iron Throne? Who will end up in charge of Westeros?
I honestly don't know. And the only thing that can push me in the right direction is a gut feeling that it's probably wrong.
Okay.
And that's because if he is a Targaryen and a Stark, the name of the series is A Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh, look at you.
So you think it could be Jon Snow. That's good.
Well, I think it's one of the three. And probably not Tyrion because he's already gone that route, sort of, on the side and didn't like it.
Yeah. Right. Okay, nice. I hadn't even thought of that. I hadn't even thought of that.
The fact that the series is
called Song of Ice and Fire. And Jon Targaryen is representative of both. Yeah. Right. Wow, very cool.
If indeed it is Jon Targaryen.
I'm willing, by the way, listeners out there, You can comment on the comments. I'm willing to take bets. I will bet people, not a lot of money, but I will bet people that Jon is Jon Targaryen.
I think you may be onto something. And certainly they have made much in the HBO series of the bastard children. You know, Baratheon's bastards and and the Targaryen kids as well. So I we're not done with any of this by a long shot, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And so, we do have another thing that ties in with your with the barbarian hordes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not exactly barbarians, but the common people, the High Sparrow.
Yeah. Oh, right, right.
So we've got a third force.
Well, yeah, and
I think the High Sparrow in that group is going to be wiped out.
I think so, too.
But pretty sure that Cersei's going to come down hard on them.
In the books, it's so freaking obvious that Cersei's getting played, and they do a much better version of in the series. It's her vanity of her and her ego of her being smarter than everybody else in the room. That's part of her, you know, batshit crazy in the books. Causes all this stuff to happen. And in the series, it makes much more sense, and it's more... makes much more sense is probably the wrong phrase. The fact that they didn't make Cersei that crazy in the series, they had to come up with another way, and this way made sense.
I think she's just going to unleash Franken Knight and let him go over there and do what he does.
I suspect that the Sparrow is not long for the world.
Franken Mountain.
Cersei is not a forgiving character.
No, and I have to tell you, as sympathetic as I felt for her doing the Walk of Shame, I absolutely do not think that she was remorseful. Any regrets.
And
in fact, I feel like one of the worst things that Tommen could have done was come and apologize to her, because now she knows, okay, I got control of my son again. I feel like there's a... And I'll tell you where I think this is going to go. I think she is going to turn all of the Lannister resources into a war with Dorne. It's going to be horrible women against horrible women.
And I can't stand those sand snakes.
I know, aren't they great?
No, one of them's allowed to live.
I think the people of Dorne are going to oblige her, because I think the people of Dorne hate the Lannisters as much as the Lannisters probably now hate them.
Yeah.
Those two will absolutely go at each other.
Yeah. Speaking of going at each other, that's a horrible segue. The clock on the clubhouse wall is saying that it is time once again, folks, for the Lobot Lounge to give us last calls. And usher us out the door. Thank you for joining us in this unique and fun discussion of Game of Thrones. I hope you guys have learned something. I know I certainly have. Parting words, Mark Finn?
I just really like the series. I feel like it's gotten better as it's gone, and I am keenly interested and excited in what this season brings, because it's literally going to be one of the few times when all the fans can come together and be surprised together. And I think that's better, because while there may be grumblings that it's not maybe what you wanted to see, or, oh, I wish they'd have done this, we can all at least experience it kind of in real time. And I think that makes for a better overall experience as a whole. We need more of that in fandom. So
Agreed. Mickey?
Hats off to the casting folks, because nothing has been better cast anywhere for nailing the characters as this show, and also introduced me to a bunch of actors that I otherwise wouldn't have known about.
Right.
That's right. That's right. I agree. And speaking of nailing characters, Gwendolyn Christie, my name is Joseph. Fotina. I live in Austin, Texas. Aaron, final words?
You know what? More than anything, when you boil right down to it, I love how this is a celebration of art, of the creator, and artistic creation. Just think about what the imagination of one man has done to our culture, to our fandom. One man has created something that we will talk about for years and years and decades to come. And if that is not just a testament to people out there who are wondering whether, you know, should I write this story? I don't know. Should I pursue my dream as an artist or whatever? Do it. Oh, my God, do it. You can transform the world. You don't know. You might transform the world. So do it.
Amen to that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Joseph Fotinos, reminding you that it's what I do. I drink and I know things. And Red Skull lives. Good night, everyone.
Ah! What? What was that?
He worked.
Red Skull lives.
What? Yeah, I don't.
Red Skull lives.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive.
Promotional consideration by Ned's Haberdashery.
Yeah, Joseph has a thing for Red Skull, Mark. Just let it go.
I know. I just
it's gonna be my sign off every
Joseph,
time.
Joseph, Ant-Man lives.
Well, we know that. It's gonna be my enjoy every sandwich and enjoy the burrito. It's gonna be my sign off.
We've managed to not have a comic book podcast for the first time twice in a row for the first time, and then you bring that up at the end. Yeah. Just for that, Star Wars. There we go.
Nice.